Hi, I'm Ines.
And I'm Camilla.
Welcome to Made It, a podcast where we interview Italian entrepreneurs and innovators to discover their stories and learn some important business and life lessons along the way. Our aim is to inspire and motivate you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Did we surprise you with this English intro? Don't worry, we want to continue to do our episodes in Italian, but we wanted to give English a try, especially given the focus on today's guest business, and it is a good way to promote Italian talent abroad. This is our second episode in partnership with the King's College Italian Society, and towards the end, you will hear the voice of Daniele Suzzataia, the president of the society, who asked a few questions on behalf of the student body. If you haven't listened to it, you should definitely go listen to the first episode of this podcast collaboration, where we interviewed Mauro Porcini, Chief Design Officer of PepsiCo.
Our guest today is Claudia Recchi. She's the co-founder of EdSites, a tech company that uses conversational AI to lower college dropout rates in the US. Claudia launched the business with her sister in 2018 after she graduated from Georgetown University when she was just 22 years old. The mobile application they built utilizes a chatbot system to help address student stresses at school, everything from financial aid, finding counseling services, and balancing their class load. In 2020, Forbes included Claudia and her sister in their 30 under 30 list, both in the US and in Italy. And after having already raised a successful seed round of $1 million, in May this year, thanks to the momentum it was experiencing during the pandemic, EdSites raised a Series A round of $1.6 million in venture capital funding from a slew of high-profile investors, including Lakehouse VC, Kairos VC, and The Fund, and contribution from the founders of Warby Parker, Harry's, Allbirds, Bonobos, and Rent the Runway. Let's listen to Claudia's story. Claudia, welcome to the podcast.
We're so happy to have you on our show. So let's start with the questions. After graduating from high school, you left Italy to pursue your degree in the US at Georgetown. What pushed you to go study abroad?
So I think my parents always raised me with a bit of a international mindset. We went to an international high school, an American high school growing up. And my sister, who was 2 years older than I am, she actually went to the US when she was 18. So when I turned 18, I decided to follow my sister's footsteps and also go to the US. And I was picking between a few different schools. Initially, I wanted to go to California really badly. And then I actually visited Berkeley and I visited Georgetown and ended up falling in love with Georgetown.
What experiences in your formative and university education inspired you to create EdSites and make it your career?
Going to the US for college, there were definitely a lot of things about the US higher education system that were new to me. And navigating the college experience there was all very new. I didn't know, you know, that what clubs were, what advisors were. And so in a certain way, like I wish I had had a tool like the one that we built. It would have definitely helped me a lot. And so that's, I think, part of it. And then the other portion is just, I've always been really passionate about ed tech. And my senior year of college at Georgetown, I actually built a mobile application for college classrooms. That was really more of a side project at the time, but it ended up growing to over 200 colleges in the US. It was a free app, so we didn't have, you know, a business model. There was no way to actually make money, but it got us super passionate about ed tech. And through that mobile application, we had the opportunity to talk to a lot of college administrators. And that's really where we learned about the college dropout crisis.
So you obviously just touched upon it. So is that basically when the idea for EdSites came about?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So my senior year of college, I built the mobile application. I was actually going to go work at Amazon. So I wasn't planning on like starting a company, but I got really into this mobile application. It grew really quickly. Again, it was free, but it grew really quickly. And so I ended up deferring my job at Amazon by 6 months. And I was like, let's see how this goes. And then maybe I'll go back. Then I never actually ended up going. So I deferred by 6 months. The app, you know, kind of like took off. And that's really where, again, like the app was more about classroom engagement. But through the app, I was just exposed to so many college administrators. And so that's really where I learned about the dropout crisis, which unlike the app was really easy to monetize on and really easy to turn into a business.
We'll get into a little bit more detail about exactly what the app does later. But can you kind of tell us, once you've had this idea and you identified the problem and you wanted to build EdSites, what were the steps, if you could really break it down, for you to make this idea and turn it into a reality?
I would say the first step is really finding some sort of validation that the problem actually exists and that people are willing to pay for it. And so that was the very, very first version of the app. With that validation, once we got a lot of signups, 200 universities on board, even if there was no real business model at the time, that was enough for us to get into Techstars, which is a global accelerator. And so after we got into Techstars, I would recommend going through an accelerator to any founder, just because, you know, it gives you so much more credibility. It helps you stand out among other startups. So after getting some validation, we went through Techstars. With the acceptance, they also give you $120,000 in funding. So that was great because it allowed us to develop the product a little bit more. And then after that, we piloted our solution, the new concept, because we really entered Texas with a slightly different idea. But we piloted the new concept at a local state school in Missouri. We had a big success there. As you said, we increased retention by 12%. Saved the university about $2 million in tuition revenue. And then after that, it was honestly pretty easy to raise money after that. We raised our first more serious round, I guess, after this pilot, and it was around $1 million. And then we raised another nearly $2 million in March. And then, yeah, we've been growing quickly since. But I would say, like, the most important steps when you're starting off are proving that there's actually a need for what you're doing in the market, that people are actually willing to pay for it. And then if you have that, then you can raise a little bit of money to like create a first version of your product.
To talk a little bit more about the accelerator that you got into, what do you need to get into an accelerator? Do you need to have like a minimum viable product? Do you need to have a co-founder? Because I know that like Y Combinator only accepts co-founders. You can't just go as a solo founder. Like, what are some of the things and the requirements?
Yeah, so definitely having a co-founder is helpful. Ideally, your co-founder would be technical if you're a tech startup. So that's, if you have that, that's great. What that also allows you to do if you have a technical co-founder is actually build a first version of your product without having to spend money, which is great. And then, yeah, you can have a very base, it honestly depends on your experience. I think if you're a second time founder, if you're like, really have a great network and already know a ton of people at Y Combinator or Techstars, then the requirements are honestly a little bit different because maybe they don't need as much because they trust that like you're going to do well anyway. But as a, you know, when I applied to Techstars, hadn't sold a company. I was very young, out of college, didn't have a network in the startup space. And so for us, it was really important to prove that, yeah, that we actually had tested the product before, even if it was a really basic version and there was a need. So yeah, I would say a minimal viable product and then a good team. And then if you have like a bit of funding or a little bit of revenue, that's great. That's better. I wouldn't say it's like a strict requirement, but it definitely helps.
Is your sister then the tech founder or you are?
I'm a little bit more, but honestly, we are sort of like neither of us are like hardcore technical. We're sort of an exception in that sense. We were pretty lucky because we had won a few competitions before Techstars actually. So we had won around like $40,000 through just like startup competitions of sorts. And that allowed us to build like a super basic version of the product, which allowed us to get users. So by the time that we had applied to Techstars, even if we weren't technical, we already had like a bunch of users and an initial product.
How did you decide to work with your sister and what's it like to work with her?
I mean, I love it. I can't picture it being any other way. To a certain extent, I always knew that I was going to work with her. I didn't know it was going to be this company. I didn't know it was going to be this early on, but I think I always knew that I wanted to start a company with my sister. We're very compatible. We're very different. So it works. I think it works because we're very different, but at the same time, because we're sisters, there's very few things that we are not comfortable telling each other. So we always joke that we're never passive aggressive because we're always just aggressive. So that just like makes it easier because you don't, you know, you're not beating around the bush. You're not like scared of saying something because you're just, and so that's, it definitely made us move faster and it's been great.
Of course, the pandemic was a very important moment for your business. Universities realized that needed to stay in touch with students even more given that they were not on campus. And obviously, students themselves were facing bigger challenges. How did you navigate that? And did you see the opportunity immediately? Was it hard to ramp up and serve all those people who needed you?
It was really stressful, honestly. It was exciting on a one hand, because as you said, like, people were needing our product more than ever. So that was exciting. And at the same time, it was kind of sad, obviously, because we were really in touch with the reality of hundreds of thousands of students across the US who are now struggling financially, losing their jobs, either the parents that lost their jobs, seeing more mental health issues than we'd ever seen before. I guess in terms of how we did it, I think we realized pretty early on that it was a big opportunity for us. One of the big value propositions of our chatbot is helping make university resources more efficient. You know, the average advisor in the US has 300 students that they're responsible for. And so how do you make sure that these people make the most out of their time and really focus on the people who need the most help? And during a time like COVID, obviously people are, you know, facing even more challenges. There's, for example, like emergency aids or like emergency funds that are, they're being created, but at the same time, there's the funds are very limited and you need to figure out, you know, who needs it the most at the institution. And so our product is naturally very good at that just because we collect massive amounts of data on the student experience, on their struggles, and then are able to very quickly connect students to resources.
And we didn't say this, but how many people are on the EdSites team?
Yeah, so there's 11 of us on our team.
And so for you as a sort of leader and founder, what did it mean sort of having to lead all those people in a tough time and having to ramp up so quickly? And
it was really stressful. And then that's when we realized that we had to hire because we were not ready or prepared for this type of growth. But then the problem is that once you hire, you actually have more work because you need to train the people. You need to, well, first of all, hiring takes a long time, interviewing. And so in the midst of, you know, just being so overwhelmed, we were also like hiring, like looking for people, interviewing, evaluating, like, and then like training and onboarding all of that remotely. So it was really crazy.
This momentum led you to close an important fundraising round in May this year. How did the fundraising meeting go? What did investors really love about your product? Anything you can tell us about sort of the behind the scenes?
So we had raised before, a little bit about a year before, and it wasn't terrible. Like I hear some horror stories, so it wasn't too bad, but it was definitely not an easy process. But then this time was 1,000 times easier for us. We were really lucky because we started, there's nothing better that can happen to you than you start raising money. And then while you're raising money, just grow a ton because then investors get, you know, they get FOMO. They're like, oh my gosh, they're like taking off. And then you're updating them as the round goes. And so that created a lot of momentum. So we got really lucky in that sense. The first investor is always the hardest to get just because in general, people never want to be the first ones to invest. Everyone wants to be the last check in the round. We got pretty lucky. We found John from Lake House Ventures, which is a venture capital fund in New York. And he was phenomenal. Like he was one of those people who like doesn't play games. There's a lot of games in fundraising. Like people, again, like just like feed off of FOMO and invest because X person invest or Y person invest. Whereas this guy was just like really like what we were doing. And even if we had no commitments, no one else investing, he was like, yeah, I'll invest $600K at the time. So that was incredible. And then after he committed, the rest was pretty easy. We got lucky that he ended up knowing a ton of people, being really well connected. And so he connected us to Andy Dunn, who's the founder of Bonobos, which is this clothing company. And then Andy also knew a ton of other people. And so he connected us to the founders of Warby Parker and Rent the Runway. And then they connected us to the founders of Allbirds, Harry's. So it was kind of like after you get the ball rolling, it's a lot easier. And especially if you get like a few big names and everyone's like, oh my gosh, like XYZ invested, then I want to invest too. I think the first check is always the hardest though. It's like when you have no one else committed and they really need to invest because they believe in you and they believe in the company, not because you know, of anything else.
It's funny to hear the stories. As you know, we typically interview Italian entrepreneurs who have to fundraise in Italy. And I'm sure their experiences, actually, we know their experience is very different. I think in the US, people, there is more of a culture, an investment culture and a VC culture. So it's good to hear that things move so fast and that people believe in your idea. And if you have to put your finger on it, what do you think? Do you think people believed in the business model, in you as a person, you and your sister as a founding team? What's the thing that excited them about AdSites?
I think at this stage, at a stage like ours, even if we were having so much momentum, we were growing quickly. So obviously they like that. But I still think that the biggest factor is still going to be the founding team. It's still going to be like, do they think ultimately that these founders can grow this company?
And was it hard to fundraise at such a young age? Did you see any skepticism based on the fact that you guys were so young?
Yeah, there was definitely skepticism. I think we had done it a few times before. So it wasn't our first time and our attitude was very different this time. And so it was a lot easier. Investors tend to go into the meeting looking for reasons not to invest as opposed to looking for reasons to invest. And so you need to convince them extra hard because you're not, you know, the person on the other side of the table is not predisposed to investing. And so that's a really big thing. But then there's also the fact that, you know, you haven't done it before. And so you're also less confident in yourself. And you're also not as good at pitching yourself and pitching your vision because you don't necessarily believe or really see how you could make it really big. You feel nearly dumb saying that, you know, we're going to be worth, you know, $1 billion or whatever. And so the first time was hard for us because we were like, you know, how can I pitch this thing where we barely have a product, we barely have customers. And the first time was really hard. And then gradually start realizing how that's actually possible. And you also realize that that's what everyone else pitches. And so you become a lot more confident in yourself and you start pitching a bigger vision. And when that switch happens, it becomes a lot easier to raise money as well.
You were 22 years old the first time around, I believe, or just over. And so super, super young. I can't even imagine what I was doing when I was 22, but definitely not ready to pitch investors. Not that I am now, actually. And just to stay on the challenges theme, did you face any other sort of big challenges as you were building up the company that you remember? Maybe a moment that sort of threatened your future or AdSites' future? And if so, do you remember how you tackled them? Can you give us an example?
I mean, there were so many. There were so many instances and kind of, oh, shoot moment where are we going to make this? I will say probably the biggest was, so we started off with a mobile application and that was the one that grew to 200 schools that got us into Techstars. But then we realized, okay, there's actually no way to monetize this. So we need to change our business model, focus on an issue that universities are willing to pay for. And that's when we really changed the business model and started working on the dropout crisis. That was probably the hardest decision that we've ever made because we felt like we had made so much progress. We had, at the time, we had maybe a few tens of thousands of students on the platform. And so kind of taking a step back and being okay, no, we're going to scratch everything and basically start again was a huge decision. And I think we were either going to kind of give up or decide to change and pivot the company. And so we pivoted the company, obviously super happy that we did. And now in retrospect, you know, it doesn't seem as hard of a decision, but at the time it was really hard, especially because I had also had my sister quit her job. I never started my job, but I never cared about that for myself. But I think for her, she had a really good career. She was working at Bloomberg. She was making great money. And so I had her quit her job and work with us.
How did you convince her? What was your, did she believe in your vision immediately? Because I guess you had the idea and you had the first product.
I don't know if she ever was super sold on the actual business model. Again, we were growing a lot. So I think there was always the element of FOMO of what if I don't join and then she makes it big. But I think it was also I was so convinced. Now thinking back, I was probably delusional and there was no business model, but I was so convinced that it was going to work out that I think I convinced her. But I wasn't being strategic or anything. I genuinely believed that there was potential in that app.
Did you always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur or did it kind of happen by accident?
Yeah, I think I always knew I wanted to start a company at some point. I definitely did not think it was going to be this early on. So I knew that I was going to start something. Maybe I was probably picturing like, you know, late 30s or like in my 30s at some point. And I always sort of knew it was going to be with my sister actually as well. Yeah, I definitely didn't think it was going to be this early on.
And if you had to kind of pick some of the characteristics of a successful entrepreneur, what do you think are the most important ones to have?
Yeah, I think the most important are being gritty, determined, and just like very resilient, like someone who doesn't give up. I think that's super important. And then it's also important to combine that to adaptability and like being able to take feedback. And I think it's a tough balance, right? Because like sometimes people who are determined, but they just stay on their way and like never change your mind. Whereas it's a weird combination of you need to be determined. You can't give up. You need to be able to like, you know, overcome obstacles all the time. Cause literally the first 2 years of starting a company are like one obstacle after the next and so many no's. So you need to be able to like overcome that and just have this mentality of like, we'll figure it out. But at the same time, you also need to be like super flexible, super adaptable, and really like listen at what your customers are saying, what the market is saying, and yeah, have an open mind.
Thank you. I think it's very important to kind of outline these things because obviously being an entrepreneur is not for everyone because you need so much resilience and you really are going to face, as you mentioned, so many challenges, so many obstacles, so many no's. So you really have to kind of like keep going. And sometimes a lot of people, I think, get discouraged. I'll now leave the floor to Daniele, who will ask you some questions that the King students were curious about.
And the first question that I have that I wanted to ask you was, why do you think university retention or completion rates are dwindling in the US? And in what ways do you think that technology, specifically yours, can help solve these issues?
So it's a very complex problem, the one of retention. And in general, it really stems from the fact that, you know, colleges back in the day used to really be something accessible for the elite. But recently that has changed, thankfully. And a lot of different people from different backgrounds are now able to go to college, but obviously they don't always have the same support at home. Maybe their parents don't speak the language. Maybe their parents have never gone to college or first generation. A lot of students are, you know, struggling to balance work and school because they're working for a full-time job on top of going to class. And so all those challenges really end up really getting in the way of students being able to complete their degree. There's a big misconception, which is that students drop out for academic reasons. And in reality, only 5% of students, at least in the US, drop out purely for academic reasons. Typically, grades are really like a symptom of a larger issue that's going on in the student's life. So be that maybe like financial struggles or be it mental health issues. That's why our approach is more holistic. And we really focus on engaging with the students directly, understanding the small issues that they're going through before they escalate, before they, you know, the student actually ends up maybe not attending classes or dropping courses or, you know, not going well and then eventually dropping out.
You mentioned mental health, and this is something that has really arrived at the forefront, specifically in the UK in recent months. They've really been pushing the importance of mental health within students. And so in what ways do you engage with students when you say that you improve and support them in their wellness?
So our chatbot is all SMS-based, and we help them in two key ways. The first is we act sort of like a Siri for college. So if students have questions, we connect them to the best resources and answer those questions. And then the second way is we're actually proactively reaching out to students based on what we know about them and what they've told us and what we think they might struggle with. And as we uncover issues, we connect them to the best resource for them.
Right. So essentially, your service kind of acts as like a mediator between the university services and the student themselves. Speaking about this service specifically, you know, it's something that seems to be very motivated towards a specific weakness in American colleges and universities and this very rigid education system in the US. So do you think that this service could also be rolled out in Italy?
Yeah, I think it definitely could. Actually, after we made the Italian under 30 list, we got some universities actually reach out to us in Italy. So I think there is definitely a potential and it could definitely work. I will say, like, as a startup, you have such limited resources that it's important to like really maintain focus. And so we've had, you know, schools in Italy ask us to go there. some in Canada. We've had like high schools even like ask us to help them out with the dropout crisis. And I think it's all super exciting stuff that we can venture into later. But I think for now, we just want to make sure that we keep focus and don't get too distracted.
Finally, one last question, and this is just kind of going back into a more general topic about students and their wellness during university. So if you could give one recommendation to students currently in university, what would it be?
Enjoy it. Never again will your top priority be learning and working on yourself. And I think it's super cool to be able to do that. So that's the first thing. And then the second is network. Like, it's so important to network in college, and you meet so many cool, diverse people. And so just like take advantage of that, because you can learn so much from them. And also, you really never know what people will end up doing, what you'll end up doing, and how you can be helpful to each other down the line. Yeah, a lot of our success has also come in some shape or form through people that I met at Georgetown. So the for example, the investor who, our lead investor from this round, he was connected to a connection from a professor at Georgetown. Like, it was like three connections away, but it still came from that. And so I would say just like, yeah, maintain good relationships with everyone and try to meet as many people as possible, because you never know who can help you out down the line and who you can help out as well down the line.
But yeah, we were going to wrap up. But before doing so, I wanted to, because you were talking about your university experience and what your advice was, I just wanted to note something that sort of jumped out to me when you were telling the story of EdSites, is how much university, or Georgetown specifically, how much opportunity that space gave you by probably teaching you a lot about startups, talking about startups, and allowing you to participate in startup challenges. And I hope that I hope that culture makes it to universities this side of the pond, because it would be so great to expose students to this world early on. And maybe I'll let you comment on it, but I'm sure it helped you a lot to start EdSites, and maybe you wouldn't have at such an early age if you hadn't had that opportunity.
100%, 100%. And just like hearing it, knowing that it's an option, that's the thing. Like, I didn't even know, you know, like, that I could start something right out of college, but just like all these competitions, all these like stories of other, you know, Georgetown people who started companies helped so much. So I totally agree. I hope that also makes its way to Italy.
But yeah, we reached the end. So our last question is always to sort of speak about the Italian spirit, for lack of a better translation, but for the Italians listening, it's called Italianità. And so we were going to ask you, how much do you think your Italian spirit helped you in getting you to where you are today and in your entrepreneurship path?
Yeah, I think it was essential. I mean, I think it was the mix of having that Italian mentality and kind of this mentality of like, I'll figure it out. And I feel like Italians are very creative and se la sanno cavare. I don't know how to explain it in Italy, but they just like, they know how to figure stuff out. Combined to also like a lot of opportunity abroad was really helpful and crucial in being where we are today.
And did you ever feel behind because you were an Italian abroad or an Italian entrepreneur? Was that ever sort of a hindrance rather than a helpful thing?
It never really was. No, in the US especially, people love Italians. It was crazy. People immediately just really like Italians. So as soon as you said you're Italian, people were like, oh, interesting. Like they want to make conversation and they want to know more. It wasn't ever kind of like an issue. Maybe if I moved now to the US from Italy, it could be a little bit more challenging because, one, because of the language, two, because you don't know how things work in the US, how people relate to each other. But I think having been there for college, I understood the American culture enough to be at ease in it and navigate it well, while also having the benefits of being Italian. And it's just like always a good conversation starter, and people typically really like Italians in the US.
Well, Claudia, thank you so much for being such a great guest and for being on our podcast today. I'm sure your story, actually, I'm hopeful that your story will inspire a lot of, especially young people, to follow their dreams and to start companies or not start companies, but have learned a lot from your stories. I will say I'm super impressed by how early you started, by how young you are, and how I can see that you're on a path
to success, and you've started a great company. So congratulations, and we wish you the best of luck for EdSites and all that's to come.